God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. National security is very important. It seems that the threats to our national security are growing by the day. Thank you, friends, for tuning in to Southwest Radio Church. This is Pastor Larry. In a 750-page report to Congress released March the 1st, the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence concluded that the United States must sharpen its artificial intelligence power tools in order not to fall behind the efforts of Communist China. If left unchecked, the report concluded, the communist regime's rapid advance in the AI field would see China surpass America within the next decade. America's heavy dependence on digital systems could make AI systems a convenient tool for adversaries such as the Chinese Communist Party. AI-enabled malign propaganda, as it is called, has the capacity to send a million individualized messages that cater to each recipient's digital activities, emotions, and social circles, as in the case of Beijing's influence campaign during the 2020 Taiwanese elections and automated bots harassing a National Basketball Association team's general manager, whose pro-Hong Kong tweet had offended the communist regime. AI could also help state actors harvest personal data of private American citizens to model how best to manipulate behavior or cause harm, accelerate cyber attacks, and program biotechnology innovations with little regard to bioethical standards. Yes, the place to start in updating American national security is found in 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. It has been said that every Christian needs to think God's thoughts after him. Our minds have to be attuned to God's thoughts as revealed in Scripture. We must be able to face life knowing full well the mind of God on every issue. Indeed, we must have a biblical frame of reference by which we can answer every question and face every challenge from a biblically saturated mind filled with divine truth. Now, how do we do that? We must develop a Christian worldview.
A worldview is a person's intellectual, spiritual, and emotional framework that determines how that person interprets the world, their experiences, and their place in life. For example, if a person is left with a large inheritance, say $1 million, that person's worldview will determine how that person uses that inheritance. What does he do with the money? Does that person party? Does that person start a mission in the inner city where Christ is needed? Does that person hoard all that money? In Luke 12, verse 13 and following, Jesus tells the parable of the rich fool. We read that, "The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do?' He decided to pull down his barns and build a larger one, and then live a life of ease. But God said to him, 'Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee.'" The rich fool had the wrong worldview. It happens all the time. A wrong worldview guarantees that the person will make bad choices. A worldview is like colored glasses. If you wear red-colored glasses, everything looks red. If you wear blue-colored glasses, everything looks blue. Having a Christian worldview is like having glasses on that helps you see everything as God sees them.
Everyone has a worldview. Christians, non-Christians, atheists, progressives, conservatives, men, women, people who think that marriage can be redefined by the U.S. Supreme Court, people who think only God can define marriage, I mean, everyone has a worldview. Even the person who says, "Let's eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die," that expresses a worldview. Even the claim that life is just a big, bad joke, that life is totally meaningless, and that there is no such thing as a worldview, is a worldview.
A worldview explains why people think the way they do and why they act the way they do. If you try to explain to a person who is wearing red-colored glasses that the world is blue, that person will think you are out of your mind. Worldview explains why some people just won't change their minds about something even though the facts show that they are wrong and need to change their minds.
How specifically does a worldview function? In order to grasp the significance of a worldview, we need to remember that a person's worldview answers four really fundamental questions. The first question is the question of origins. Where did the world and the whole universe come from? Is matter eternal? Was there a big bang, a large cosmic explosion that scattered bits and pieces all around so that we have stars and planets?
The second question a worldview answers is the question of meaning and purpose. Why am I here, and what is life all about? Unfortunately, the world, in the main, does not have a satisfying answer to this question. Secular people in a secular society can only give answers that focus on themselves. Life is all about me, or they might tell you that life has no meaning. We just go through endless cycles of habit. We get up in the morning, we go to school or go to work, we come home, we go to sleep, and the next day, this essentially meaningless cycle starts all over again. We grow up, get married, have children, retire, and then die. That's all, friends, nothing else. Quote, since life is so ordinary, I've got to do something that makes it more exciting, like smoke pot or some other psychedelic drug, so that I can feel like I am floating and seeing the walls fold and bend and see the colors of the rainbow, close quotes. That describes our society today. We are in the deadly clutches of postmodernism.
The third question a person's worldview answers is the question of ethics. What is right and what is wrong? Though secularists, materialists, and atheists may be moral, they cannot give a coherent answer to explain their morality. Whenever an individual is without God and does not believe that a supreme being exists, that person becomes the final judge of what is right and what is wrong. That person becomes their own God. Now that's scary. Since people are innately sinful, they are innately selfish. They live in a world where they are to be worshipped. Their needs, their wants, their desires become the most important thing. Also involved in this question of ethics is, what is my standard of right and wrong? Where can I go to find out what is right and what is wrong? For the Christian, the answer is the Bible. For the non-Christian, the answer varies. Human reason, personal experience, the will of the majority may be the ultimate standard of ethical behavior.
The fourth and final question that worldview asks is the question of destiny. What happens to me when I die? What is my final end? A biblical worldview says an individual's final destiny is either heaven or hell. A non-biblical worldview will say that there is no afterlife. Death is the end of a person's existence. We are simply physical beings. When physical life ceases, the person ceases to exist. There is no reward and no punishment in the afterlife because there is no afterlife.
A Christian worldview is one that is rooted and grounded in the Bible. All Christians have a worldview, but many Christians do not have a consistent Christian worldview. A truly Christian worldview has not seeped into every area of their lives. Their worldview has not completely transformed their thinking and their behavior. They don't have a consistent worldview and thus will vote candidates into office who may make great and wonderful promises of peace, equality, and joy. But because of their inconsistent worldview, they don't realize that these candidates are really enemies of Christ.
One's worldview affects a person's view of politics and government, economics, and one's view of science. Let's look for a moment at politics and government. A Christian worldview acknowledges that human rights are a gift from God, who never changes. Government must therefore respect life, liberty, and the individual's pursuit of happiness. A non-Christian worldview claims that human rights come from the goodness of the government. And you are right, Pastor Larry. One's worldview determines how a person votes in national and local elections.
Yes, one's worldview affects a person's understanding of politics and government. It also impacts one's view of economics and wealth. The Bible reveals that Christians are stewards. What they have and own doesn't really belong to them. Rather, God has entrusted Christians with what is really His. We are to be faithful and obedient to use our possessions in a way that is consistent with the will and wishes of the divine owner.
And then worldview also affects how we view science. Christians know that scientific investigation is only possible because God has built order into His creation. Science ultimately discovers what God has created and explains it in scientific terms so that the blessings of creation can be used for the betterment of mankind. Christians make good scientists because they know that the subject matter of their study has a divine origin and a sacred purpose.
There is a big difference, however, between science and scientism, or between science and politicized science. Science is rooted in objective fact. Scientism is politicized science, science that is being used to promote a particular political agenda that promotes a progressive or liberal cause. The concept of worldview is so vitally important. I pursued this a little further with Doug Woodward. He's been on our show many times before. In this segment, we're going to talk about worldview in history and thought. This matter of worldview is very important. Everyone has a worldview, but there are a lot of Christians who don't even know what the word means, and that is a tragedy. We're visiting with Doug Woodward. He's the author of Revising Reality, which deals with some of what we're going to be talking about. Doug, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you know, as we talk about worldview, I often think of a worldview as kind of a lens that we look at reality through. For example, if we have red glasses, everything is going to be red. And if somebody else has blue glasses and we try to persuade them that everything is red, they're going to say, no, everything is blue. That's how important worldview is. And I think that's why sometimes we can marshal facts against the position, but that won't change the person's mind if they have a different worldview, because
that's
the worldview is so determinative in our thinking. So let's start maybe with the question of, what's the origin of the discussion of worldviews?
Right. Certainly, German theologians had talked about the Weltanschauung, worldview, but it really, for evangelicals, it really began, for the most part, about 1976. There was a famous book published called The Universe Next Door by a theologian, James Sire, S-I-R-E. It's in its sixth edition, so it continues to be a book that's used in the seminary and other places. But essentially, it traces worldviews based upon religion. The worldview of a Buddhist is different than the worldview of a Muslim is different than the worldview of a Christian. And as we often know, within Christendom, there are different worldviews. A mainline denominational person will look at the world one way. A Southern Baptist will look at it a different. A Pentecostal person will look at it differently. And so worldviews vary a lot based upon the nature of God, whether we believe in God or we don't, how God interacts, how we interact with God. Is God a personal God? Is God a deistic God, just sort of sets the clock and let it run? Those are the kinds of things that Sire talked about in his book, and it definitely elevated that whole discussion and made the notion of worldview as kind of the foundation for our beliefs, became kind of a central theme in sort of many evangelical circles.
Well, I think today many people would be skeptical of a supernatural realm. I mean, we're thinking of the materialist, we're thinking of the atheist, we're thinking of the socialist, the communist, and of course socialism is becoming very, very popular. So do you think that the atheist would have a real problem with accepting a biblical worldview? And if so, and I think the answer is yes, but if so, how do we reach him with a biblical worldview when his worldview is very different? And I'm thinking, if we really want to witness to people, we have to know where they're coming from. And I think there are so many woke people out there. There are millennials and so forth. How do we bridge that gap?
Well, I certainly think that there's a wide variety of answers to that question. One is by living a life of meaning. You know, I call it living a salty life. It makes the people around us thirsty. And that's part of the, you know, by our own witness. I tend to think, though, that, you know, this is the place of apologetics, you know, defending the faith, that there's usually a point of Francis Schaeffer is a Christian intellectual, late Francis Schaeffer, and he wrote a number of books that were very much at the heart of the concept of worldview and altering a person's points of view. And so he wrote a book called The God Who Was There. And he wrote several other books, Escape from Reason and so forth. These were all books that were written sort of in the 1970s, 1980s, had a very significant impact upon evangelical thinking. And so there was a, not to get too technical, but there was a school of thought, a guy named Cornelius Van Til, that taught that we should evaluate someone's presuppositions. What do they presuppose about life? And that really, the presupposition and worldview are very similar. And so what Schaeffer argued is that you have to challenge their presuppositions, challenge their premises about the world and life. And of course, in the 1970s, 1960s, you were dealing with what's known as nihilism, you know, that nothingness, that there is nothing there. There is no God who is there. There's no basis for reality, that we can understand it. There's other words, solipsism and different words that are used to talk about that point of view, but it's essentially a godless point of view. What's interesting in the book Revising Reality that myself and three other authors we wrote, we opened the book with a guy named Carl Sagan, who many people remember, billions and billions of stars. Carl Sagan wrote a book called Cosmos that was then and still is, I believe, the most popular public television program that's ever been. Sagan said, "The cosmos is all that ever was, that is, and ever will be." And of course, what he was doing was he was excluding God. And so the question is, how do you find meaning? Well, for Sagan, his whole worldview was just to wonder about the cosmos. Isn't it wonderful? And I wonder about what the cosmos means, and I see the beauty of it. And so he wanted to attach meaning and his life's meaning to the search for wonder and to experience wonder in the cosmos. The real question, of course, is whether or not that's a sufficient basis for us to handle or to hang our morals, our ethicals, our meaning, and our destiny, right?
I would have a problem with that. If we're searching, do we ever arrive, and what do we arrive at?
Well, to look at the Horse Nebula, you know, in the Orion constellation does evoke a sense of wonder. It does remind us of Psalm 8, you know, that God, you know, we wonder about the glory of God, the majestic, you know, the majesty of God and so forth. Psalm 8 certainly is a very central biblical passage dealing with our worldview. I should also mention the name Michael Heiser.
Yes, The Unseen Realm.
The Unseen Realm, and a simpler book he wrote called The Supernatural World, which was the same book but sort of transposed for a little bit less technical reading. And his book's probably the most important book for many evangelicals today thinking about these kinds of things. And then I like to think Revising Reality also has been an important book to talk about and bring up the subject of worldview, knowing what is the meaning of life and what is my meaning. And worldview is very tightly coupled with that question of what difference does it make?
And I think that's a really important question, because I think so many of the people that we meet on the street or people in the news media, and I'm speaking about the drive-by news media, to use Rush Limbaugh's phrase, their worldview is basically eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And,
you know,
we have no accountability to anyone. So if I can cheat you without getting caught, you're just a glob of protoplasm, like I'm a glob of protoplasm. And I think we can see how important the worldview is. If we have that kind of a worldview, it's dog eat dog.
Yeah, this is really the central theme in 1 Corinthians 15, the whole issue of the resurrection. Paul says, you know, if there is no resurrection, if we die and that's it, then we are of all men the most miserable. And of course, what he was saying is that there is a resurrection, and that really is fundamental to our worldview. That there is a destiny that is with God, that we will be resurrected. We will be like Christ. Now, you talk about changing your worldview. What does it mean to be a glorified believer? What are the powers there, too? Think a little bit about Superman, and you begin to understand a little bit of what it might be like to be glorified and to be partakers of the divine nature, as Peter said. A person is downtrodden, depressed, lots of times, recognizing, you know, the nature that God is there, that there is life after death, and that life is going to be free from the tribulations and sorrows of this world. That is a huge step in the right direction for meaning and happiness and to overcome despondency.
Yeah, and I think if a person has a Christian worldview, which would include the significance of being a witness. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have that joy of eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have that joy, our worldview says that we need to bring others into the kingdom, that they too will have that joy. And I think that makes life meaningful. But apart from that, we're miserable.
It does. We're happy if we win souls.
Yes. You know,
we are very happy. And anyone that's had the experience of bringing a person into the knowledge of saving knowledge of Christ, especially if you do it one-on-one, which I did back when I was in college with Campus Crusade for Christ, it is electrifying. Yeah. And to see a person kind of break through the doubt and the disbelief and to finally acknowledge that Jesus Christ is real and Jesus Christ is my Savior.
My first church was in rural Pennsylvania. And if anyone knows anything about rural Pennsylvania, February is a bad month. Foggy, rainy, dreary. I mean, the whole church was depressed. I mean, you didn't see the sun. Well, I got the bright idea, and it's not me. I think the Lord gave it to me. I said, well, why don't we have an evangelistic outreach? We had four-wheel drive vehicles, little snow and mud. It didn't really matter. We'd go. And it was amazing. Even though there were a lot of people who didn't get saved, but people's spirits were lifted to knock on the door and to maybe share a track. And then if somebody says, if you say, do you want to receive Jesus right now? And the person would say, yes. And wow, they'd come back and they'd give a testimony and the whole church was on fire. So you're right. Worldview is very important. Well, friends, we've been visiting with Douglas Woodward. The book that we recommend for this interview is Revising Reality. Matthew, please come to the mic and tell our listeners how they can get that book.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the book written by four different authors, including our guest, Doug Woodward. It is titled Revising Reality, A Biblical Look into the Cosmos. And you can have a copy for a gift of $25 if you live in the United States and $45 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number, 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And you can order this book and any of our materials on our website at swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Is morality possible for atheists? Yes, some atheists are moral. Atheists, even though they don't acknowledge the existence of God, are like every other human being. They've been made in the image of God. However, the real question should be, is atheism a worldview by which a society or nation can live with and prosper?
The basic question of ethics is, who makes the rules, God or men? The biblical answer is that God makes them. The humanistic answer is that men make them. How can we determine what is moral if there is no God who reveals to us what is right or wrong? We really can't. If man is the standard, we would have to find a perfect man who can make perfect rules. Christians, of course, know that humans are not perfect. We don't need the Bible to affirm that. History and current events give us all the proof we need.
In his book, River Out of Eden, atheist Richard Dawkins writes, in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason to it, nor any justice in life. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect, if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Close quotes.
Apologist Richard E. Simmons III cites Dawkins in a radio interview with host Justin Brierley. Dawkins argues that it is clear that human morality is nothing more than the outcome of the evolutionary process. Simmons observes from the interview that the world's most prominent atheist could not emphatically say that rape is immoral. Though he may not believe this is true within his heart, he seeks to be a good, consistent Darwinian atheist. Dawkins even believes that it is not good for a society always to follow Darwinian morality because Dawkins says it is ruthless. Here's the quote from Dawkins. I have always said that I am a passionate anti-Darwinian when it comes to the way we should organize our lives and morality. We want to avoid basing our society on Darwinian principles, close quotes.
Dawkins, on the one hand, says that we live our lives based on our DNA, but then he introduces a moral code by telling us not to follow our DNA. The individual who has had the most to say about atheism and morality is the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. He clearly stated that there is no absolute right or wrong. For this reason, Nietzsche had great contempt for Christianity. However, Nietzsche predicted that the English-speaking world would seek to abandon a belief in God, but would attempt to hold on to Christian values. He also predicted, when societies reject God, Christian morality itself will eventually disappear. The reason is that it will be more difficult to motivate people to be moral, for they will naturally follow their selfish instincts and desires.
These atheists know in their hearts that there is something wrong with their atheistic worldview. It just doesn't work. It leads to violence and to the collapsing of a society, just as we see now in our contemporary world. Why, then, don't they give up their atheism and turn to Christianity? For two reasons. First, they are sinners and cannot live by any external moral code. They are morally incapable of doing so. Secondly, they are too proud to admit that they are sinners and need a change of heart. Hence, in such a condition, they will never receive Christ.
When we offer an item for $30, we do not get to keep $30. We have to purchase these items we offer. Then we have to pay the radio stations to play our program. We know you can get these items we offer cheaper at someplace else. But the little money we do get to keep goes for purchasing new items, paying radio stations, wages, utility bills, computers, and all the rest that keeps this ministry on the air. So when you look for a cheaper price online, remember the great program you just heard and say to yourself, I'll support Southwest Radio Church because I enjoy their messages on Bible prophecy and Bible teaching. While you're browsing our website, take a look at the many different sections we offer. There's lots of uplifting articles in our encouragement section and plenty of videos to watch in our watch section. That's all happening at swrc.com. Are there dimensional portals, and is it possible to open them? If it is possible, what would happen if they did open? To investigate, we invite you to order our special offer today by calling 1-800-652-1144. We would also like you to send any questions or comments you may have to Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, 73147. And please visit our website, swrc.com. And if you're on Facebook, please visit our Facebook page too. Thank you for joining us today. Join us again on Monday here on Southwest Radio Church.